friends, those of you who have travelled at all, especially those who have travelled perhaps all over the world or at least over a great part of it, will agree that in every part of the world we find that the landscape that we encounter has a distinctive appearance. And this distinctive appearance of the landscape in different parts of the world is determined, we may say, principally by two different factors. In the first place, it's determined, of course, by the various natural, i.e. geographical, features of the place, determined by whether that particular part of the world, that particular area, happens to be mountainous or hilly or simply flat, determined also by whether it's covered with lush green vegetation or whether it's dry and barren and desert-like. And in the second place, the appearance of the landscape is determined by what we can call the human contribution. That is to say, determined by its various architectural features. And this human contribution can be of many kinds. These architectural features can be of many kinds. They may consist of a few scattered mud huts or rows of snug, neatly thatched little cottages, or the human contribution may consist even of magnificent pyramids or soaring church spires, or even, coming down to more modern times, of clusters of skyscrapers. And going even farther, and perhaps not so very far from home, we may say that the human contribution in some areas consists of enormous slag heaps and smoking factory chimneys and so on. Now we find, if we turn to the east, we find that Buddhism, from its beginnings in India, spread in the course of centuries over a truly enormous area. It spread over an area which extended from the deserts of Central Asia in the west as far as the islands of Japan in the east. And again, we find it extending from the icy, wind-swept tablelands of Tibet in the north, right down to the sun-drenched tropical island of Ceylon in the south. And obviously, the natural features, the landscapes of all these areas, all these different parts of the east, will be very, very different. And even their architectural features will be different. But if we cast our eye over them all, whether it's Tibet, whether it's Ceylon, or Japan, or China, or Central Asia, or India, Burma, Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, wherever we go throughout this Eastern Buddhist area, we find that there's one architectural feature, or one type of architectural monument, which is absolutely ubiquitous throughout this whole area. We find that it's discovered on bleak mountain tops, in pleasant wooded valleys, in the midst of vast plains, as well as by the seashore. And this monument, this ubiquitous Buddhist monument, is, of course, what we call the stupa. In the course of centuries, in the course of millennia even, the stupa has assumed a number of different forms. Sometimes they are so different from one another you can hardly recognize them as springing from the same origins, from the same simple architectural forms. But in one or another of these forms, diverse though they may appear to be, the stupa is found all over the Buddhist world. It's made of very different materials. Sometimes we find it's built of brick, sometimes of stone. And in some cases, we even find examples of stupas being built entirely, or almost entirely, of precious metals, of gold and silver, and so on. And in some cases, we find that there are stupas which are even studded with precious stones. And again, some stupas are very, very big indeed, so big that it would take you 10 minutes to circumambulate them. And again, you find other stupas so small, so dainty, that you can hold them in the palm of your hand. Now, it's with the stupa that we shall be dealing tonight. And we're dealing with it not just as part of the general history of Buddhist art, we're dealing with it on account of its profound symbolical significance. In fact, we may say that the stupa is one of the richest and most complex symbols in the whole field of Buddhism, especially Mahayana Buddhism. And it also happens to be one of the symbols occurring, very dramatically occurring, you may remember, in the White Lotus Sutra.